Hey, thanks.
Thanks.
And so suddenly, here was this impenetrable wall that was slammed down saying that path is done.
And I bluffed my way through it. I kept my sense of humor all the way through.
But about that time, the sound started again, and I decided I was going to find where it was coming from.
Well, it's true. Every time you walk in the door, you don't know what you're going to face.
And I'm at the point in my life where I'm thinking about, well, what can I do? What kind of journeys can I do and can I not do as I grow older?
And next thing I know, we are all going to jail.
Dear Diary, this would never happen in Wisconsin.
Welcome to Hitchhiking Off the Map. This is Conrad Bishop.
And Elizabeth Fuller, speaking to you on a microphone I've taken apart and rebuilt twice, and I hope it sounds better.
And coming again to you from our back porch in Sebastopol, California, we've decided to move outside our soundproof studio and actually get some air and some sunshine. And so if you hear some strange sounds in the background, trucks, neighbors chatter, hummingbirds. Once in a while we have a jackass that goes crazy and has a seizure in the far distance. Just assume that this is part of life. This week, we have a real live actual person and then a dramatic story. These are stories about sudden changes, very profound changes in daily life. Not about winning the lottery, these are more difficult stories. What would you do if you won the lottery, the question of the week?
Oh my God. Oh, wouldn't it be fun to just get like great big bushel baskets and pile them up with money and then jump in it?
Uncle
barefoot?
Scrooge in the Donald Duck cartoons. I remember a Donald Duck comic book from the 50s where Scrooge McDuck, the wealthiest duck in the world, had not only barrels and warehouses full of money, he had acres and acres of money. And at one point, Donald and the three little nephew ducks get lost in the desert, starving, and there are sand dunes of gold coins, there are greenback oases, and they go on and on, dying in the desert of wealth. Of course, that presupposes that you can actually win the lottery without having actually played it.
Oh, come on. This is,
I think it's grotesque.
This is contemporary corporate finance ruling the world. Think different.
Think different. Got it. Here's our first story, Jim Lumen. I visited Jim Lumen in his home in Toledo. He'd suggested I come to the side door. It was easier for him to answer. I looked down, shook hands. I followed him as he pulled himself up the 5 steps to the kitchen. We sat and I asked him, well, could you describe your condition?
I have both legs amputated, one below the knee, one above the knee. By and large, I'm significantly shorter than my original 6'4" frame. I actually volunteered at 16 to be a dispatcher for a very little town. Did that for 3 or 4 years. You know, these police officers in this small town of about 1,000-1,500 people, they would stop by and make social calls on elderly ladies at night and sit down and talked to him for a few minutes on the porch, and became really quite a bit more social than doing anything. Your social work and interacting with the community, and that struck me as not a bad way to earn a living. In the time I was a police officer, I delivered 4 babies. All the things people put to being a cop, you know, the gun and shooting people, which I never did, and arresting people, which is almost always a last resort. Really never played that big a picture to it, you know. There was a case where a man was drunk and was threatening to shoot his family. The one time I thought I might have to actually shoot somebody. To this day, I can't really listen to the Eagles Lying Eyes because he had it playing over and over in the background. The man is crying and why, and you don't respect me, you don't love me, I just need to end this, and to end this, I need to end all of us. And this song in the background going over and over and over. So to this day, I can't listen to that song. And over a period of 2 hours of talking to him, he decided, well, that's probably not what he really, really wanted to do. That was the one time I actually had a gun pointed at a person. thinking, oh my God, I'm going to have to shoot this guy in front of his wife and kids to prevent him from shooting them.
So then Jim told me about the trip he took that changed his life. It wasn't a vacation or a pilgrimage. It was just one more trip to work.
Getting up and you're going to work, you stop at the station for a while, and there's a shift change report, kind of keep an eye out for this car, kind of keep an eye out for that car. There's something suspicious here and there. I came on at midnight, and this was about 3 a.m. So prior to that, I had two or three calls. I had a domestic dispute that turned out to be just people yelling, and calmed them down. There was a report of a little girl hadn't come home yet, and we had found her two blocks over in a residential neighborhood with her girlfriend. They were both sound asleep in bed. She decided to sleep over and didn't tell anybody. Most nights, that's basically what it is. You have 8 hours, you have 15, 16 calls. And checking the truck stops was just next on my agenda. The local prosecutor had decided that they needed to crack down on the prostitutes working the truck stops and so forth. I never thought that it should be illegal, personally. I didn't think as they were particularly harming anybody. So having to do this because of a local politician wanting to get his name in the paper was aggravating. But you have a directive from the prosecutor, which is the chief law enforcement officer of the county, you kind of have to go along with it. I was in back of one of the truck stops out there and had noticed a particular lady going from truck to truck to truck and recognized her as a regular customer of the police department and had pulled up after she had got into the truck and was talked to the truck driver and said, well, you know, I have some business I have to take care of with this lady. I need to get her out of the truck and we're all cool here. You have nothing to worry about. I just need to take care of her. I need to escort her off the property, and I'm probably going to write her a citation for trespassing. I went over to the other side of the truck, talked to her, and she was refusing to get out of the truck. So I said, okay, I'll be back in about 5 minutes with a female officer to help you get out of the truck. And I went and stood in front of the truck and was talking on the radio. The next thing I consciously remember is 3.5 weeks later in the hospital. That's it. And the lower leg bones were semi-crushed. I had several fractures of the upper thigh, most of my ribs, 4 vertebrae, my collarbone, my left arm, my cracked jaw. I had some internal bleeding. They had to suture a lung. I ruptured part of the sternum. I believe that was pretty much it, but I thought it was enough at the time. They told me I laid there for close to an hour. I know they caught the man and so forth and so on because I had radioed in. Anytime you're with somebody, you radio in license number and all that, so it was an easy matter to track him down. And the statement he gave was that he was afraid that his name would end up in a report somehow and it would get back to his wife that he's with a prostitute. And only thing I could do was shake my head and saying, the lady was arrested for trespassing. You are a truck driver in the back of a truck stop. I couldn't even legally ask you your name, let alone, you know. And she was in no trouble to speak of. She was going to get a $100 fine. It was totally, you know, senseless because she would have been walked off the property 5 minutes after I'm done. She would have snuck back around and went back to his truck anyhow. I know that. She knows this. This is just paperwork. I don't think he actually meant to hit. I think he thought I could get out of the way, but that's my opinion. I don't know. There was no way I could. I had no warning, but I would have been more than happy to have accommodated him. We just would have taken care of it later. But I didn't have that option. So he panicked, and I have not a clue why. I mean, other than he was afraid his wife would find out. And now he's doing 15 to 25 years when all he had to do was sit there.
So I asked Jim the requisite dumb question, how has your life changed? Well, his own marriage dissolved. He went through a dozen surgeries, depression, a suicide attempt.
Nothing to fill the time, bored, extremely angry.
And then later, the daily things.
By and large, it's just seeing things from a different perspective at 6 the world was about here to me, and now it's up there somewhere. It's just taken a change of perspective. I still forget sometimes that I can't just stand up and walk away, especially in the middle of the night. The urge to visit the bathroom and climb out of bed and go to stand up, and whoops, I can't do that. And all of a sudden you're laying on the floor because there was nothing to stand up on. Also, there's that annoying itch about 2 feet below the end of my legs that you can't do anything about, but it's very real and it's very there, and it's just, that's, you can, you know, if it was there, at least you could scratch, but you can't even do that. It's just there, and it's itching, and it's annoying, and there's not a damn thing you can do about it. They had interesting conversations with people since then where a friend would be overstaying for a while and ask to borrow a pair of socks and ask me if I had a clean pair and would have to say no. And they say, well, no, do you have a, or they ask for like a pair of black socks. So, no, I don't have any. It'd be brown, white, and no, I don't have any. And they finally realize, oh, he has no socks. So I made a point, somewhere in this house, there's one of those, a pair of those really long striped one with all the toes for the next time somebody asks to borrow a pair of socks, I can actually hand them to them. Okay, I have socks for you.
By chance, he came into contact with an ecumenical religious organization. And now he's a full-time volunteer, pretty much running the business side of it.
What I find appealing is the sense of tribe and community. That's something other religions try to expose or put out there that they do. It's this one place I found where, while we may argue, we may fight, but still the community's there. You know, it's okay, it's a big deal. We just disagreed with each other. I mean, we have this conglomerate of views out there, anything. I mean, if just on the religious end, we have Catholics out there. We have Jewish people out there. We have every flavor of neo-pagan, whatever. And all these people could come together and just be a family. That's what I like. What you believe is what you believe. That's fine. You're still my friend. You're still my brother. You're still, you know, part of my tribe. Everybody really does work at it, you know, no matter what. Well, police tend to look at each other as family, protecting each other and look out after each other's families. So it probably has a little something to do with that. Basically, we all considered ourselves family then, so the family connection probably is fairly strong and probably transferred over somewhat. But yeah, So the energy I put to one place, now I can put somewhere else. So it seems to have made a big difference.
And he has a new partner.
And it's been amazing. Taking part of an empty spot that was there inside of my heart, and it's filled again. And she's absolutely an amazing woman. Bubbly, cheerful, jumps up and down, and loves to be silly, which is something I like to do. Just an amazing woman. Candy owns 60 acres out in the country on a farm, and there's some thoughts that in a few years I would go out there with her and we'd just use this as a rental property, a little extra income and so forth, and that's looking pretty good. That's actually sounding really, really good.
He talked about one memory of walking.
I was about 21 or so and newly on a small police force, and we were walking through the woods in a field looking for a lost child. There's about a dozen or so people from different police departments just walking through the mowed down corn and around some trees and then going into the tree line trying to find this lost little girl, which we eventually found later back in a little fort some kids had built. But that was the one real vivid, is just walking through shortly after harvest cornfields and this woods bordering this farm looking for this little girl, which turned out really, really well. Actually dreamed of walking through that field quite often.
And I said, thanks, Jim. And that was my trip to Toledo.
This is Hitchhiking Off the Map.
Jim is the president, office manager, and a minister of a small hardy band of eclectic spiritual pioneers called Church of All Worlds. And we'd like to invite you to contribute a story of your own about trips, changes, surprises, disasters, success. Visit our website, www.independentei.org. where you can also hear previous episodes of the show, and send us an email.
You know, I was thinking of how it's always possible to become absolutely, unpredictably, terrifyingly vulnerable, like Jim was. Think about being the finch on our windowsill. She's sitting there on 5 eggs. We're benevolent. We love the fact that she's there. But how is she supposed to know that? You know, that you sneak a peek at the finch and she turns around and sees you and she thinks, oh my God, it's Godzilla. She doesn't know what our motives are. She just flies away.
This story came out of our son's experience as a nurse at St. Vincent's in Manhattan, looking out the window and seeing the towers collapse. And recalling our own panic 20-odd years before, 30 miles from Three Mile Island, wondering about another set of concrete towers. This is called Lot's Wife.
Friday, I took my daughter to the airport. She was flying back to New York 2 months after 9/11.
This was really good, Mom. Really. I mean, this was great.
I'm glad you can come out.
You sound a little undecided about that.
Well, you know, I very studiously avoided saying the obvious thing, which is, I wish you were not going back there right now.
Well, I've got a
job. You've got a job, I know, and I've only got one daughter.
Mom, I think I'm more likely to be flattened by a taxi cab than blown up by a suicide bomber, if that's any comfort.
I kept thinking about Three Mile Island. You were, what, 5? You remember that?
Well, I just remember getting out of school and we went on a trip, and you were telling me some Bible story. She's the one on the stone.
Pillar of salt, because she looked back.
Yeah, but Three Mile Island, that's not really the same. That didn't really happen. I mean, it didn't really blow up.
The nightmares really happened. What did they say on the news?
Nothing, ma'am.
No evacuation or anything?
It says be alert.
Be alert? How can we be alert?
A report any suspicious mushroom cloud.
It goes to what, a 30-mile radius?
It blows up in 48 hours.
You know, there is just the slightest possibility that we might not ever come back.
I think we need to be rational.
And I didn't. I thought we needed to be hysterical and screaming with rage, and that would be by far the most practical thing. We got in a huge fight about taking the photo albums. I don't know which of us wanted to take them. We drove to Pittsburgh.
So we'll unload you at Edie's, and I don't think it's even in danger. I'll just drive straight back, get another load, and that's it.
I feel like Lot's wife.
Oh?
From the Bible. First year I went to college, my mother drove me up. She told me that story. I had no idea what she was trying to say. She was never big on the Bible.
The whole thing with Lot's wife was, don't look back.
So, if this thing blew up, if suddenly the house isn't there, the neighbors, the furniture, that's it? Don't look back?
It wasn't my idea. It was God's.
What is it?
Just a story, honey.
Tell it.
Well, it... Okay. There was a man named Lot and his wife, and they had to leave town.
When the morning arose, the angels hastened to Lot, saying, rise, take thy wife and thy daughters, lest thou be consumed.
Where do we go, Mama?
Never mind where.
I don't want to.
Neither do I. Leave the doll, you're not a baby.
I want it.
Your father says no. We left early morning. No goodbyes. Pack what you can. Blood runs cold. Brush their hair, they say. Where do we go? I don't have the first idea. Leave the doll. The babies, the mommies, they put your face to the fire.
What about Michaela?
Michaela?
My friend.
She will be safe.
And they said, escape for thy life. Look not behind thee. Escape to the mountain, lest thou be consumed.
Into the desert. Before the neighbors see us. They think him insane. Tie him down and beat him. to get the demon out. My mother gave me the secrets before the wedding night. What to do if the man might harm you or the babies. We have no say, but we have the secrets. And one day he wakes up dead. They have the commandments. We have the secrets. We wake the neighbors.
That is not God's will.
The way you think. If people thought like you, we'd wipe out whole cities, man, woman, and child, just because they're not us.
We shall. There will be gnashing of teeth.
We left by the western gate.
The Lord rained upon Sodom and upon Gomorrah brimstone and fire from the Lord out of heaven.
The fire went up. Men's secrets, they burn whole cities. Heat on my back, black sky. On the rocks, the flicker and glow. Don't look back. Don't look back. No.
I remember seeing some comedy improv. They did a spoof of that. A guy comes on, kind of like a skinny guy. Hello, I'm God. I'm from the Bible. Oh, we're going to bomb the place. And Lot's wife says, how do you know it's God? It's totally unreasonable. That's God. The guy goes, kaboom. Angel says, okay, Sodom, Gomorrah, kaput, enough is enough. But then they couldn't stop him. You know, London, kaboom. Paris, kaboom. Missoula, Montana, kaboom. It was a hoot.
He overthrew those cities and all the inhabitants of the cities and all which grew on the ground.
Then I thought of my daughter's little friend, Michaela. Michaela would dance and dance, and then I could see her dancing, dancing in flames.
I looked back. I needed to look for.
His wife looked back from behind him, and she became a pillar of salt.
I looked back. I froze there, heard them crying for me, but they went on, and I lost the crying. Over the days, my clothes fell away. I stood out, white, in the sun.
Three Mile Island. I don't remember actually what happened on that
time. What happened actually was that we stayed with your Aunt Edie in Pittsburgh. Jerry drove back to pick up financial stuff, figuring if everything blue in the eastern U.S. was rendered kaput for 10 million years, we'd still have to file our taxes. We stayed till the end of the week, then came home feeling kind of dumb.
Terminal B. Well, 9/11, you know, we just stood around watching it on television, and then a couple hours they said, go home. But nothing's running. I had to walk across the bridge to Brooklyn. And people from downtown trudging along covered with this white ash. Like the living dead at rush hour. We're walking. Nobody's looking back. I wanted to look over my shoulder. What's happening now? What's it doing behind me? We just walked straight ahead. Don't look back. But 2 days later, I went back to work, and I didn't turn to Saul. I think just pull in up here. I guess we didn't talk much. Next time.
Yeah. Don't turn to salt. I won't if you won't.
I will truly write more. Really, truly. Bye, Mom.
Bye. I watched her in through the doors. She's so beautiful. Then the cop waved me on. I cried a while, heading up 101. Then I put some music on and came back home.
That was Lot's Wife. Joining us as performers were Laurie Gusta and Cricket.
Hitchhiking Off the Map is a production of The Independent Eye. For CDs of our shows or to contribute stories, visit our website at www.independenteye.org. Hitchhiking is supported by the National Endowment for the Arts and by the Hitchhikers Guild.
Including Dr. Seishi Oka, who practices dentistry in, no kidding, Gap, Pennsylvania. He sends us this postcard. Remember what Kurt Vonnegut said when asked what he considers the most overrated virtue? His answer, teeth. My response to the commodification of healthcare, blatantly referred to for the past 20 years as the healthcare industry. The human experience of birth, living, dying, and death each have their outlet, which I refer to respectively as Wall Med, McDental, House of Hospice, and Burial King. Peace, say she.
You can send a postcard too. We'd like to find support for the show without the usual corporate underwriting. And it occurred to us, well, maybe there are people who'd like to offer commercials in favor of being human.
That could become a popular cause. Thank you, Dr. Oka.
But beyond that, there's no real plans. We'll just take it as it happens. But that, still, it's sounding good. 60 acres along a river, two-thirds of it treed, 100-year-old farmhouse, and it's already sitting there, you know. So that's the only long-reaching, far-scale, down-the-road plan we have.